And this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Kyle, we just heard that story about Bonneville in our What's in a Name series, something that we started doing maybe about a year ago.
I think you're right.
Once a month, we pick something in our listening area that maybe we don't know where the name came from.
And even if we know, I don't think at any time for any of these What's in a Name stories have we come away not learning something.
But oh, for sure.
You did Wilson Park, right?
That was the first one that I ever did, yeah.
And then didn't you find out that Lake Wilson is also named for the same person?
Actually, it's not the same person.
It's not the same person.
Right? That's what I learned. That's what I found out. But no, it's really interesting because I've lived in this area my entire life. And there are things, I mean, just right down the street from the radio station that I'm still curious as to what, you know, where it came from.
And one of the great things about What's in a Name is that we're never going to run out of things to tell you about these. And I think this series really kind of brings home the whole idea that we are not three or four communities in our listening area, but we are one. Now, someone who's grown up in Fort Smith may very well know who General Bonneville was, but that doesn't mean someone in Siloam Springs or in Berryville or in Waldron did.
Right.
And likewise, when you find out why something in Benton County, like all the towns in Benton County that you've done, are named what they are, someone, you know, in Fort Smith or Barling may not know that. And I think it draws us closer together. That's one of the things we try to do with Ozarks at Large is, hey, this is a pretty cool part of the world. We're all here together. It's not just Northwest Arkansas and the River Valley or something like that.
Southwest Missouri.
Right.
Eastern Oklahoma.
Right. We've been able to do this daily show on Ozarks, on KUAF, Ozarks at Large's daily show, about 3.5 years now. My one concern when we started this was, will there be enough material? That is not our concern.
It is not. Sometimes it's a struggle to cover all of the things that we need to cover.
We just can't.
No.
And making peace with that has been difficult.
Right.
Appreciate the efforts that we have to cover this area that does extend from Tahlequah to Harrison, from McDonald County, Missouri, down to Waldron and Mena. If you appreciate hearing stories from your neighborhood, but also from the other side of this region, remember that we're able to do this because of listener support.
Only with listener support. And if you have yet to make your contribution during the spring on-air fundraiser, now is a great time to do so. You can do so now at our secure website, supportkuaf.com. It's an easy form, just takes a couple of minutes to fill out. And you know that you have made you've done your part to make Ozarks at Large happen for the rest of the community.
Now, we don't have phone volunteers in the building now in the Carver Center for Public Radio. We will tomorrow at noon. And if you're a fan of the Roots Festival, during the noon show, the noon edition of Ozarks at Large, all this week we've been thanking people for listening during the fundraiser by allowing you a chance to register to win one of two packages of Roots Festival merchandise. Hoodies, caps,
koozies,
beer glasses, the whole nine yards. Two packages of significant amount of the 2013 edition of Roots Festival.
Limited edition.
So make a note, if you want to be registered to get in on the drawing that takes place tomorrow on the noon edition, you got to call in tomorrow between 12 and 12:30 during the show. You don't have to give money. You could contribute online right now at supportkuaf.com. It's open to everybody, whether you want to become a member or not, whether you already have, whether you have no intention to. But that's tomorrow, and we'll give those items away. But you have to be listening and call in between 12:30 or 12:40 tomorrow. We'll give the packages away during the last 10 minutes or so of tomorrow's noon edition.
Right. We'll put all of the names in our ceramic cow and draw a couple.
So. Yeah, that'll be fun. And remember that you can also go online right now and register for those sold-out VIP passes. There are two that we'll give away in August, but you can register now at KUAF.com. Speaking of the web,
supportkuaf.com to support.
And from all of us,
thank you.
This is Ozarks at Large. John Register has quite a story to tell. A graduate of the University of Arkansas and a former member of the University of Arkansas track and field team, he qualified for the U.S. Olympic trials in 1988 and 92 and was on his way to making the U.S. Olympic team in 1996 when a simple misstep over a hurdle changed his life. The fluke accident caused severe damage and led to the amputation of a leg. He continued to compete in athletic events, winning a silver medal in the long jump at the 2000 Paralympic Games in Sydney. a veteran of the Army. He served in Desert Shield and Desert Storm and also competed in the Army's world-class athletic program. Now he works for the U.S. Olympic Committee, and John Register was back at his alma mater this week as the 2014 Arkansas Alumni Association's Johnson Fellow. The fellowship, endowed by Jeff and Marcia Johnson, is designed to bring alumni back to campus to engage and inspire students. When John Register came to the Carver Center for Public Radio earlier this week, he had just been speaking to juniors at Fayetteville High School.
So I had maybe 20 minutes, right, to talk to this group of students who are coming in, the backpacks on, headphones on, and kind of who's this guy is going to be speaking to us. I get out of class for 20 minutes, and it's really I was thinking hard about how do I engage them right off the bat. And so I have a series of arsenal of stories that I can use, but I wanted to get them to understand that life is fragile, life can take unexpected turns, and get to a moment in time for them that creates their new normal. You know, that's one of the outcomes of my messages is to how do we create our new normals? Every day we're doing it. So I want that at that young of an age to see that they are every day working towards something that's going to be in the future. I never knew I was going to be a Johnson Fellow, right? This happened because of a series of things that happened in my life, my time at the university, to the other people I met in the United States Army, to those I met in the United States Olympic Committee. All these folks in my life really poured into me that created my new normals, and I accepted those gifts, those offers from people. So to get to those young folks, you know, you have to get them engaged early, and we have to remember what we were like at that age. What was it like for me when I came in and sat and listened to a guest presenter? That was that's the mindset I put myself in. So I told a very humorous story. But my first story I told was about the accident, that life changes quickly. But then what did I learn from that? Then it's a humorous story that got them engaged. And then we did an activity because people don't like to sit there and listen to a talking head. We want to do something with it. So it was getting the folks that had the right brain, the left brain, and those that need the tactile, like myself, to engage them.
When you talk to young people who might be, I guess this could extend up the age ladder, but when you talk to young people who perhaps we think have a sense of
invincible,
thank you. They think they're invincible. I would imagine that's where your story can really resonate with them, because when you were at the peak of youth, peak of your physical ability, you had that new normal thrust upon you.
Right, and I think we all do, but at that age, we do think we're invincible. We think we're going to live forever, and we're not focused. We're focused on the right now instead of what's coming next. And my accident was just that. It was a freak accident. I went across a hurdle during a training session. I landed wrong, awkwardly, hyperextended my left leg. And I went from being the eighth fastest 400-meter hurdler in the country to flat on my back. And 5 days later, subsequently because of the amputation, the popliteal artery being severed, an amputation ensued. So I had to create my new normal. It was created for me, right? Mm-hmm. It was due to trauma. But what happens that, as I told the young folks today, is what happens when you see you're driving like you're in this nice, beautiful looking car and life is going along great, and you see a cliff coming up. Do you have the ability to change direction, to change course before you actually get there? So if I would have seen what was my life, and the life is going along great, and I saw that becoming an Army officer, going to the Olympic Games was my dream. If I saw this path, would I have the courage to change my direction on my own instead of having trauma actually take it? Would I drive my car off the cliff, or would I turn the car? And that's the dynamic. Sometimes in life, if we're making the transition and the leap to the next level that we want to get to, we may not have the courage to take the steering wheel and just turn it. Sometimes we just drive off the cliff because we're comfortable. And then the car crashes, and now we have to create the new normal from there. And it's a lot tougher to do it because, of course, we've gone down so much, we have to pick ourselves back up. So that's the gist of it within the creation of those new normals. We have to either do it through trauma, or we do it because we see the inevitable coming.
Getting rid of the comfortable can be tough.
Yeah, it is tough. I mean, our comfort zones are our comfort zones. That's why they're there. But without resistance, you know, we're not going to move forward. There has to be some resistance for us to appreciate the place where we have been. And every time we move to maybe a new job, or maybe we lost a loved one and we have to come out from underneath that, or whatever the situation might be, there's always some type of dynamic of uncomfortability, if that's a word, that moves us to and pushes us to the next transition. There's a story about the Japanese fishermen. They were bringing fish to market, but every time they brought the fish to market, the fish would spoil because they were in these static tanks. And so they're trying to figure, well, how can we get them to market fresh so we can kill them, right, and then eat them and they're fresh. So they put an agent in the water, an antagonist of the fish, so that would chase them around the pool in the water, so that when they got to the market, they were not stagnant, they were exercised, so then they could be killed to be eaten, right? And that's the we need sometimes to put an antagonist in our water tank to make us move so that we can get to the next level.
What do you reasonably hope someone, be it a 20-minute or 40-minute presentation, takes away? Because they might be inspired at that moment. Mm-hmm. They might feel good. And some will take away a lesson. What do you reasonably hope, generally, they take away?
So usually it's one thing. Because if it's too many things, I got, you know, what I find in presentation, what people will tell me after a presentation, is a litany of things they heard from that presentation. So that got me to thinking, okay, what can I get them to do that's one thing they could take away? So I make it a very general request or an offer for them. So I will say at the end of the towards the end of the presentation, you've been thinking about a lot of stuff. I've been telling you some stories here. I've been giving you some points. Inevitably, you have thought about something or someone or somehow a process by which you got to a situation that you were in. Whatever that thing was, I want you to write it down, and then I want you to think a little bit about that harder, about what was the process that got you to this one moment in time, because that will serve for you as a process. That one activity will serve as a process for you by which you might be able to measure other things, challenges that come in your life. How do we hurdle our adversities? It's we hurdle them by changing our perspective, by tolerating confusion. That is, something comes against us that we don't think is correct or right, but we have to go through the process in order to test those theories to make sure they're right. And we change. Then the third thing is we skin our knees, we take risks. And the fourth thing is we have to pursue our passions. So with all those things, I challenge the audience to then take one thing away. And then I ask them to do a physical with, after you've done that, I want you to write me back and let me know what it was that you either changed or you were thinking about. Because the stories that come out of that are just amazing. Some people have, like after today, there was the reason I started in this space, I didn't know why I was going to start that way, but sometimes it's just a godsend, right? And we have a young woman teacher over at the high school came up to me afterwards and said she had just lost her son five months prior. And that junior class was in the junior class, was struggling with that. And so this creating the new normal message was spot on for them today. And that's why they were so heavily engaged, because they had a personal investment in it with a physical, tangible tragedy that they were dealing with and trying to overcome with that inside that struggle. And so the challenge then is to get them, okay, we have this situation. How do we turn that into something that we can offer to other people of the experience? And it's painful right now. That it's and I think I can't remember who the comedian was that said it, but comedy is pain plus time, right? Same as tragedy. Tragedy is pain plus time. How can we tell the stories? It's going to be the painful process, and sometimes we can't tell that story right away. We have to wait until we get removed enough from it that we can come back and tell it so they can have a relevant point to our audiences.
Stories have always been an important part of our culture, mm-hmm. but now it seems like with TED Talks and with the podcasts like The Moth and people telling stories, it seems like stories are more as valued as they've been in a long time. Did you hear stories growing up from family members or friends?
Yeah, all the time I heard stories. I mean, probably the most profound story that I didn't know about from my youth was around the civil rights movement. And I didn't realize how engaged my family was inside of that. My father was a Presbyterian minister. He was jailed in Hattiesburg, Mississippi for voter rights, you know. Oh. And then my Uncle McGloster Current, was the executive director of branches for the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, which is all people. And he was in charge of the March on Washington, all the platform speakers. I'm like, Wow, right? And you think about who was on that day. I mean, there were celebrities that were on that day. There were politicians. You know, of course, Dr. King went off on a tangent on this "I Had a Dream" speech thing that was became one of the most profound speeches in our history. And you know, it's just those people with inside of us that really inspire us. And again, it goes back to the whole inspirational model. We hear these stories, but stories are so relevant and important, and they're personal. They're, we own them. Because they happen to us, and that that gives to the speaker the authenticity with inside of every presentation. And I love telling the story. But we also have to, with the story, craft what is the point, what's the message of the story.
Does that apply in we're not all, well, I guess I am a professional, someone who's paid to talk, but not everybody is someone who's paid to talk or be heard. But can this apply over the kitchen table? Have a point, tell the story, try to inspire?
Yeah, I think it's twofold, right? I think that when you're around the dinner table, and that's when you have your pen and paper out because you hear the most incredible stories around there, and you're trying to steal information. It's like, that'll be great for my talk, right? and those are, but those are funny situations because they are around our dinner tables, and that is just a fun collaborative because it helps us because all of us do it. Right. And so we know the story. So when Uncle Johnny with the, you know, like myself is the guy with the one leg and they tell the funny story about him, you know, we can associate with that. So I think that's one way. And we're just kind of telling stories for story's sake. This is what happened to me today. But then when you take that story and you make a message out of it, one of the things I just did recently with a great storyteller, story theater for business world is Doug Stevenson. And he is a phenomenal guy. If you don't know this guy, y'all out there in radio land, look him up. Doug Stevenson's brilliant. And he has a 9-step story method. And I said, okay, I'm going to see if this actually really works. So I took one of my most painful stories that I've never really told before. And I took it to him and I began to work with him on it. And the payout of it was just amazing. So it's just a story about my limb loss and how I lost the leg and the tragedy around that and the emotion I want my audience to connect with. I want them to feel that pain because we all experience pain that deep. And it's not about the limb loss of my leg. It's about my audience feeling the pain that they had in their life for whatever it is they lost. And from the outcome of it is I paint the picture of I'm sitting in a wheelchair. I've lost 50 pounds. I can't push myself out of the chair, and I'm thinking about all these things in my head about what I am now, how I'm valuing myself, coming face to face with some of my own fears, frailty, and some prejudice that I had against, even people with disabilities at that time. So all these things were mixing together. Who am I now? What's my identity? Am I still a father to my wife? Am I still a father to my son, a husband to my wife? Do I still have a job in the United States Army? How do I pay for my family? I don't know what's going on. And all these negative thoughts were coming down on me and making me go on a downward spiral. My son and my wife were playing on the swing set off in the distance about 20 feet away because I couldn't get out of the chair. And I was sitting there, and my wife saw me struggling and breaking down. And as I was crying, she comes over and she says to me, and as she wrapped her arms around me, you know what, John? We are going to get through this together. This is just our new normal. It's just our new normal. So my reflection on that is all of us are creating our new normals. I had to create my new normal every single day, minute by minute, sometimes second by second. I'm creating my new normal for the place where I want to be. John Jr. jumps off the swing. He's 5 years old, does his little cartwheel, comes over. Daddy, 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 what's going on? Well, John had just validated me as his father. And in 3 seconds from jumping off the swings and coming and running over to me, he had created his new normal. So the transfer to the audience is, how about you?
It sounds like you married a pretty good inspirational speaker,
I
too.
Did. Yes, exactly right.
One final question, a bit off the topic. Where's your silver medal? What do you do with it?
Silver medal is actually in my bag. I'm showing it around.
Oh, wow, really?
I don't keep it. Actually, Julie Pretty was talking about how she had an experience with Mike Conley, of course.
When he was on the square.
On the square,
yes.
And passed his medal around.
Yes.
Do the same thing. Some athletes will keep it behind the glass, and that's fine, you know, because it's a precious thing. But I love to share it because how many chances do you get a chance to touch someone who was either number one, number two, or number three in the world on that specific day? and touch what the results of it was in a tangible way, right? And every medal's different. You know, mine is mine's from Sydney, Australia. It has got some cool markings on the back from from all the venues around Sydney, Australia. So I always pass it around to my audiences, let them touch it, it's tangible. I've never worried about it, somebody actually ever taking it, because it's just that the weight of it, people just recognize the work that went into it. This is 20 years of my life for one piece of hardware that resulted in from six jumps on October the 23rd at 10:30 in the morning in Sydney, Australia, right?
Well, and you say every medal is different. To extend a metaphor, we all have different medals
exactly
that we carry
right
with us and like to show off.
We do.
Hopefully, we do.
Yeah, right. That's exactly right.
John, thank you so much for coming in.
Oh, I'm so honored to be here. Thank you.
John Register was on the University of Arkansas campus and in Fayetteville this week as the 2014 Arkansas Alumni Association's Johnson Fellow. His website, if you'd like to learn more, is johnregister.com.